here for another episode of Jeremy and Friends, where I have my registered nurse as I was going through your all your stuff last time. And you're like, yeah, Jeremy, I'm not a dietitian. I am a nurse.
I was like, so thank you for the added letters. I appreciate them.
So Ms. Maddie Wacker, who is a registered nurse and Precision One Nutrition and CSCS strength and conditioning coach. So I'll make sure that I get that correct this time around. How is your week going?
Nailed it. My week is awesome, Jeremy. I'm super excited to be back on here with you as always. The week is good. The sun is out again here in Little Rock, Arkansas, and got to be outside a lot.
Some good weather moving forward. And we had a lot of two or three questions that came in from the last podcast. And I know what was better than having some questions come in from the podcast. We had a lot of our friends who listened to the podcast, you know, reach out to us and especially on our analogy of the spray oils.
Yeah, last week was fun. I was listening back to it and I was like, I really do go through a lot of spray olive oil.
Oh, what's funny now is I do it in almost like a circle, you know, kind of like you're making start on the outside of the pan, go all the way around until you get in the middle. And it's definitely,
you're like one,
two, three. Yeah. It is definitely 5 to 6 seconds.
Definitely nowhere near the 1/4 second serving size that it claims to be. But
I'm not changing my way that I track. You know, I've never tracked it before. I'm not tracking it now, and that's okay. You know, the point of that education was to bring awareness to people. So, but hey, today's topic, guys, I think it is a good one. It is probably the hottest topic right now, inside the social media world, you know. And one thing I will point out with nutrition education and diets and health in general, and I think maybe just topics in general, with how social media has grown in the last, 10 years, I think we'll see a lot more trends come on fast, but leave fast. I think that's just the reality of social media. But right now, like the carnivore diet is what I would say maybe the hottest one that's out there. But I think the keto diet is, one diet that has stayed around for the last decade. It's probably like a top, what I'd say two or three, ranking of people talking about, people wanting to try, people seeing success out of it. So what we'd like to do today is, define the keto diet, talk about the background of it, the history of it, how we use it in medical nutrition therapy, how it can be used in fat loss, but also remind and educate the listener that, hey, it is a lifestyle that, we want you to know the benefits of, maybe the drawbacks of, and, the pros and cons that come along with it.
Fantastic. I'm excited to dive into it.
Well, let's start first with the history, like we do, or should do with any topic that we talk about. Define what a keto-based diet is, or I could set you up with this, a nutritional ketosis diet, right? Because, inside the clinical world, it's not necessarily going to be defined as keto. It would be defined as nutritional ketosis.
Right. And I think it's important to distinguish between some of those linguistic differences. And that's not always something that's done. And it leads people to think that, a diet like the ketogenic diet, which was originally nutritional ketosis and was intended for medical purposes, is then just like automatically transferring these benefits. Somewhere along the line, the communication of the benefits get kind of shaped and molded to how we want to see it. And so then it morphs into this one in the same, and it is different. And so we'll get into that further into the podcast. But originally, what we now know as the ketogenic diet, or what we think is the ketogenic diet, or here in, the general public as the ketogenic diet, was what Jeremy actually said and is called nutritional ketosis. And so that was developed over 100 years ago in an effort to manage seizures or epilepsy. And the reason that ketosis and the ketogenic diet, as it was called by Dr. Russell Wilder, the reason that that was kind of founded or experimented with is because there had been previous success for hundreds of years on what fasting could do and the physiological changes in the brain and the body that fasting yielded on the success of seizure management. And so Dr. Wilder proposed consuming a very, very high fat, low carbohydrate, low protein, low energy, and low fluid diet to provide a nutritional approach to mimic the success that fasting had on managing seizures, and specifically pediatric seizures. And so they found a lot of success in that arena. But I want to highlight something that I said, and that's that this nutritional ketosis that they were inducing, this original keto diet, was extremely high fat, and not just low carb, but also very low protein and low energy intake in general. And there was also a fluid restriction. So this was not a, this was not a walk in the park diet. And it was, go ahead.
And I was gonna say, well, I think, you know, just so the listener will understand, like, we're doing the definition of this was all 100 years ago, right? So take a second and think about that of, you know, most of these subjects or individuals, what they had was, you know, they were having seizures secondary to epilepsy. They probably weren't overweight. Like, if we just didn't, the average number of, you know, individuals in America that were overweight 100 years ago versus now, that's going to be a lot less, right? So this wasn't designed for fat loss, right? Nor what you mentioned, it was a reduced caloric diet. Like, these individuals were not exercising either, you know? So I think that's something like we have to take in consideration when we're looking at now. Okay, I'm starting my wellness journey. I would like to do keto because I had someone do keto, or I've done keto in the past and it's worked for me. Like, okay, let's take what we're learning about keto, or what something we may find about keto, and just understand, you know, where it was coming from, you know, and what the purpose was in the beginning, and how we can, and we'll get into this, you know, modify it or make it work for our lifestyle moving forward. So I think those are a couple of things I would want to point out too, is this was probably not an obese population that they were initially doing these for, and it was specifically for decreasing the seizures.
Those are huge points to point out, for lack of a better term, because like I said, this found especially found success in the pediatric population, which pediatric obesity back then, which is in contrast to now, back then was not very common. So I do think it's very important to point out that the majority of people now look to the ketogenic diet as a weight loss tool. It was used originally for hundreds of years, and then kind of as the nutritional intervention, as a primary prevention for seizures. And the reason that kind of phased out as the primary prevention in the medical setting was not due to a lack of success, but rather due to the development of anti-epileptics. So pharmaceutical interventions kind of took over. Because as I mentioned, that very, very low carb, low protein, low energy and low fluid diet, remember, it was medically being used to control seizures that could not otherwise be controlled. And so that's not without its risks, though.
Yeah.
So you're missing a lot of other things in that diet. And so when you can take a pharmaceutical or a pill, which also I would like to point out, again, not to go down a rabbit hole, those also have adverse effects, but you're able to maybe combat some of that with a more robust diet. Not to mention, it's much more appealing to the patients if they can take something pharmaceutically, but still be able to consume enough energy, live a lifestyle they want, take in the right macronutrient split that fits their desires, their needs, their energy levels.
100%.
So,
yeah,
and over time, and one last point on kind of the history of things is over time, there has been a lot of exploration too into the ketogenic benefiting other diseases and the management of those diseases. And a lot of those have to do with the potential neurological benefit of our body processing fats, which results in something called ketone body production or ketosis. Yeah. And so it essentially just switches our body from prioritizing carbohydrates as the primary food source to prioritizing fats, which then produces different metabolites during the breakdown of that fat in our body. And some of those have, in initial studies and in different different trials have been shown to be neuroprotective. And so there is an expansion of what this nutritional ketosis can be used for beyond just seizure management. And we'll get into that a little bit later, I know.
Well, I think that's the, going back to, what is your definition of a ketosis or being in nutritional ketosis is the point that our body is utilizing fats for fuel, right? And then the fats we are producing these ketone bodies, and ketone bodies can actually pass the blood-brain barrier and be used for energy inside the brain. So therefore, then it allows fat to be the primary fuel source for the brain and the muscles, right? Where traditionally the primary fuel source for our brain would be carbohydrate until we get into this state, right? So, and then the primary fuel for the muscle, depending on the intensity of the training that we're doing, right? So if we're talking about, how it came to be, and you mentioned this earlier, and I want to make the connection on it. It was first discovered that, people were producing ketones during fasting, right? So it's like, okay, well, we just can't have people not eat to decrease this risk of seizures. So that's where the initial come out is like, okay, how can we continue to produce these ketone bodies without being in a state of fasting? And that was with, okay, well, a very low carbohydrate approach with more fat in the diet. And that's kind of where that came from. So as
Right,
we
it created a sustainable approach versus
yep.
fasting, which,
And as we move forward,
not
there's
sustainable.
different, yeah, different based on your goals. Like there's, a lot of people would term this metabolic flexibility, where your body can use ketones for fuel, but also use carbohydrate for fuel. There's a lot of things that we can look at it, being beneficial, as we move forward. But I love to kind of just paint that education. Okay, what is a nutritional ketosis diet? What is it used for? Where did it come from? And then, as you were mentioning, now it is, a lot of the research and what people are using it for is more fat loss. Or to help reverse metabolic syndrome would be a great way to just to say to cover a lot of those metabolic issues, whether it be hypertension, whether it be insulin resistance, et cetera. If we could say metabolic syndrome, kind of covering, those aspects.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought that up because, I mean, metabolic syndrome is one of the biggest epidemics that we're facing right now in the US and kind of spreading worldwide as other countries start to adopt, our food production and our dietary habits and practices. And so that was another big one that I think we'll kind of dive into at the end because I'm sure that's what you see in your client population a lot is people are using the ketogenic to address those kinds of things, even if they don't know that that's like metabolic syndrome, right? But whether it's the high blood pressure or the excess abdominal fat, the diabetes, insulin
Well,
resistance.
staying on my clients, because I think this will set you up for another one of the bullet points that you wanted to discuss today. I will see a lot of people that'll come to me and they'll have a certain macronutrient split that they found online in a keto book in some fashion. They're like, hey, Jeremy, I'm going to do nutritional ketosis. I'm like, cool. A lot of times what I do with my clients is, why do we want to do it? Right? Why are you wanting to do it? Do you like fats in your diet, first of all, right? Because I need you to enjoy eating fats if we're going to go high fat.
Yeah. It's going to be a rough road if you don't like eating fat and you're going to
Correct.
do a ketogenic diet.
And I know I'm going to talk about some modifications I kind of make to it based on lifestyle, later on. But let's speak a little bit on what people are going to see out there. Like if they just did a simple Google search on, hey, what is a macro split on a keto-based diet? Let's talk about that a little bit. And then maybe slide into like what is the current research that is going on inside of the keto world.
Perfect. I think that's a great point because you will see a lot of different things and I'm going to plug our last episode together, Jeremy. You'll see stuff in the grocery stores on the front of, the food, the face of the food, not the nutrition label, the face of the food product. And it'll market it as keto. And it is a huge, huge marketing ploy because the ketogenic diet or what people think is the ketogenic diet, or they hear that and they automatically associate it with health. They associate it with weight loss. And so knowing how to flip that product over and read the label and understand if it really fits into the ketogenic diet or a modified ketogenic diet or maybe not a ketogenic diet at all is going to be really important. So if you haven't listened to that episode, listen to that episode.
You
If I do
mean
say so, we were pretty funny on it.
You're telling me that if I go and slap keto on a bottle of water, that makes it keto friendly versus the bottle of water that doesn't say keto is not keto friendly. It's a marketing
Jeremy,
thing.
I know I'm breaking your heart. Ditch the keto water. Ditch the keto water.
Learning the definition of nutrition and quote diets, guys, is very important because if you just read the front of the label, it is marketing. Right. So companies know that there's a subgroup culture of people out there that are keto. So they'll slap keto friendly on the label of
Yeah.
something, but it doesn't make it healthy, right? Or it doesn't make it good for you. It's just it quote is keto friendly. But remember, chicken breast is keto friendly. And there's zero carbs in a chicken breast. Great source of protein, but you won't see a keto friendly sticker on a package of chicken breasts. Sorry. Soapbox. You could continue.
And technically, a chicken breast, probably in the most original definition, wouldn't have even earned the keto friendly because it was probably too high in protein. So, knowing all of these things, we'll dive into it. So, you're probably going to see about four different ketogenic diets or ketogenic derivative macronutrient splits. And so, the original one is the ketogenic diet, which was 90%, and when I'm talking about these percentages, this is referring to the percentage that that macronutrient has in your overall caloric intake. And so fat would be 90% of that diet, carbohydrates were 4% of that diet, and proteins were 6% of that diet, with total energy or total caloric intake and fluids being restricted. Remember, this was the diet originally intended to treat and manage epilepsy. So this is not the ketogenic diet that you're seeing marketed to the general public, for a number of reasons. Not only would it not hit a lot of average adults or healthy adults' nutrient needs or energy needs, but you would also be missing a lot of key components in a diet. Not to mention, I think the biggest thing is there would be close to zero adherence, I would bet, after a short amount of time on a diet like this. And so over time, the ketogenic diet, again, due to the way that the body metabolizes fats and the impact that they saw that had potentially on things related to metabolic syndrome, there were different modifications like the Atkins diet and then the modified Atkins diet. So the modified Atkins diet is, again, fats come in at 65%, which is a significant reduction from 90%. So fats at 65%, carbohydrates at 4 or 5% rather, which is still very low, but now you have protein at 30%. So a much more normal or moderate amount of protein in collaboration with the fats. And there's no energy restriction necessarily within reason with the modified Atkins diet. Because when I say, and you'll see this with the next one, the very low energy ketogenic diet is another one you might come across. Again, this one has a more even distribution of fats and proteins. It's 44% fat, 43% protein, 13% carbohydrates, and less than 800 calories a day. Again, not a diet that should be marketed to the general population. Again, this would be something that was utilized for a nutritional therapy or medical nutritional therapy, right? It's for a specific condition, recognizing that implementing this diet is targeting a disease process or a health issue, knowing that it's going to affect other areas of your health. And then the last one that I would say is probably the one that we see being marketed to the general public, and the one that has kind of undergone the biggest transition since the original development of the ketogenic diet is the ketogenic Mediterranean hybrid, or sometimes called the modified Mediterranean ketogenic diet. And so that one is a little bit more flexible, in that the fats are 45 to 50% of the diet, the proteins are 30 to 35% of the diet. And then carbohydrates, it's encouraged to keep it somewhere between 30 to 50 grams a day, which is still quite low. But the key with this one, and I'll bring up one more after this that I think a lot of people think is ketogenic, but it's actually a totally different diet. The key with the ketogenic Mediterranean diet is that there's a lot of education surrounding it. And that education involves eating real foods, incorporating whole grains, fruits, vegetables, lean proteins, healthy fats. And so it's not just, eat whatever fat, eat whatever protein, limit your carbs. It's a big emphasis on the education of what people should be consuming. And that, in my opinion, in my assessment of the research, is where a lot of the success comes from with things like the Mediterranean diet and this ketogenic Mediterranean. And then the last one that I'll mention that I want to differentiate, and I think we, Jeremy, discussed talking about this one in depth in the future because it is so popular, is the paleo diet. And so I've had a lot of individuals come to me saying that they're on a ketogenic diet, and then they describe to me a paleo diet, which is more, emphasis on proteins, healthy fats, limiting grains and carbohydrates, fruits, vegetables, enough fiber, things like that, which again kind of falls into that category of Mediterranean. And so just be careful of those distinctions because the ketogenic diet really is emphasizing fat as your primary macronutrient, whereas the paleo and the Mediterranean, are more of these whole food, unrefined, less carbs, more protein, more fat type of diet. But again, and I should have mentioned this first, the ketogenic diet is not just saying any fat goes, right? It's still emphasizing healthy fats, and those other foods that you are taking in small amounts are still meant to be primarily from unprocessed, whole, real foods.
100%. Now, I mean, you could almost, paleo and the Mediterranean would be fairly close to
Yeah,
each other, maybe other than the
very similar.
grains. And like you said, yes, the carbohydrate is very small there, but the 35 to 50 grams of carbs that they're getting a day is going to primarily come from vegetables, and berries, maybe a little bit of whole grain in there. So therefore the total carbohydrate that you're getting is full of fiber, where you can still stay in nutritional ketosis. And that would probably mimics my modification. And I've really just modified it to, what works for my clients along the way. And I think another one you could probably do on that, what we're talking about, is the carnivore, right? Because if someone's following a true carnivore diet, then technically you're going to be keto, because they're not consuming, those carbohydrate sources. So,
Yeah, like the keto paleo hybrid, high protein, high fat.
And I'd like to mention with people, like, you always need to take in consideration, like, what is your training volume? What is your goal, right? When looking at any diet that's out there, right? Putting the term diet on it, right? These are all nutritional approaches when it comes to that. Okay. Now, I love that. Gives kind of the history, gives some of the splits that are out there that people are seeing. What is some of the current research that you've seen, that you've come across, when it comes to keto specific? I have one that, I want to make sure that we hit on. That's not it is keto specific because it's looking at some keto research and fat loss, but it'll be more fat loss overall. But what are we seeing in the research? What are some of the developings or the evolution of this diet approach?
Oh, I like that you said evolution because I think that's important, right? I think there's been a lot of evolution, and for the better, I would say in my mind, because it started with fasting 100 years ago, being found to have success on seizures, which is super specific, and amazing that that was discovered for that small subset. And then this fasting but induced kind of fasting response by primarily taking in fats was found. So that made it more sustainable for that population. And then over time, it's so cool to see the research encompass and bring in other diseases that can be managed potentially by this same diet. And so the one that's most interesting to me, which I think is good because I think it'll save the one that I think that you want to talk about for you. But I think the potential neuroprotective effects of the ketogenic diet are just fascinating because we are seeing such a high prevalence and development of cognitive diseases to include dementia and Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease across the country. And right now we don't have we certainly don't have a cure, and the management is challenging. And it's hard on the individual, it's hard on the caretaker, it's hard on our healthcare system. It's just a very serious disease and challenge, I think, that we're facing in our country. And so the potential for a ketogenic type diet or a very fat dominant diet to have those neuroprotective effects is a really interesting subset of the research that they're finding. And so there is more research that's needed on these topics, but again, it comes back to how fats are metabolized in our body and some of the metabolites or products that are produced as a result of breaking down fat in our body. Those things seem to have a potential protective effect on our brain and on some of the processes that we've associated with the development of Alzheimer's, like the amyloid proteins in the brain, and things like that. And so, Jeremy, I think you had something to say. I'm going to pause there.
Yeah, I just want to give examples to the listener, because that might be like when you're saying some of the stuff, people are like, oh, what does that mean? Okay, let's think about our pendulum with this. Okay, what we do know is that a high simple sugar, high processed carbohydrate diet can increase blood glucose levels in the body, cause us to be insulin resistant. And now we have termed a lot of these neurological disease type 3 diabetes, right? So just thinking of that of being way over here on the pendulum, and then this keto diet being all the way over on this other side. So I'm excited, like you, to see like, okay, can we just do a moderate low carb diet and have these reverse effects and these benefits? Or if we're really showing signs of a neurological disease or neurological decline, if we go keto, can we help reverse it or really slow it down? Right. So that's where I'm excited to see where that research goes, in the next decade or so. Right. So that was just one thing I wanted to point out, in that it is termed, like, if you guys, do a simple Google search, put type 3 diabetes in, like, it's basically like more to do with a neurological process, and secondary to high blood glucose levels and high sugar levels. Right. So I'm like you, I'm excited to see what it does, right? And that's this side of the pendulum, and keto would be the other side of the pendulum that we know that it's going to get better, but how much, right? Does it just slow decline?
Great.
Does it improve it?
How much and how is
Correct.
it happening? Like how much can we attribute to the consumption of healthy fats having those specific physiological effects on the body? How much can we attribute to proper education? How much can we attribute to cutting out refined carbohydrates and high sugar syrup diets? How much can we attribute to the overall combination of all of those things, right? The synergy of those multiple things that we know to be good on the health. And so I think that's the exciting part. That's what we start to kind of pick out from the research. So again, this I think is a relatively new area of the research. It's certainly an area that has warranted a lot of interest and a lot of funding. And so we're seeing more studies come out about it. Right now, most of them have been in animal models, and so that can't necessarily be conferred to humans, but I think that there has been enough traction and enough evidence to suggest that there is certainly potential benefit. And I like, Jeremy, that you brought up the type 3 diabetes, which is another word for some of these neurodegenerative diseases that we're seeing. And I think that's a testament to, right, we see how much lifestyle plays into type 2 diabetes. And I think naming some of these neurodegenerative diseases type 3 diabetes goes to show that some of those cases and some of those situations can be resolved, modified, prevented, and maybe even reversed with the proper lifestyle intervention. So giving credit back to some of those things like physical activity, stress reduction, and dietary interventions in preventing some of these things.
And I think, you mentioned this earlier, that the one thing I would talk about the research on is insulin resistance, right? And I just want to preface this with the show in general. Like, the show is for education and entertainment purposes only, right? So any medical, none of this is medical advice as much as education. Like, I want you following up with
Yeah,
your
that's
doctor, I want you
huge.
following up with your dietitian, your nurse. Like, yes, Maddie's a nurse, I'm a dietitian, but all of this is just educational purposes, right? And if you're a type 2 diabetic, I don't recommend keto, right? Like, because I don't know, what type of medications you're on. I don't know what diet you're on. Like those are things that need to be taken in consideration. But there is a good amount that a keto-based diet will decrease insulin resistance, help reverse insulin resistance in the body. But I would argue that you could do the same thing on just a lower carb diet where you're incorporating whole grains, fruits and veggies into that.
Carb.
So I think that's, something that we all want to think about, in the sense of like, should I do a, keto-based diet to reverse insulin resistance, or, would just a low carb diet work in that case? Right. But there is good
Yeah,
data.
and different, yeah, different kind of carbs too, right? So, and just a generally more balanced meal, because our when we eat carbohydrates with proteins, with fats, with those micronutrients, with fiber, that is a whole different situation than just eating a slice of white bread, right? And so I think differentiating between different kind of carbohydrates, and like you said, you wouldn't just across the board recommend no carb or low carb to everyone. And that comes back to that education piece, I think, that has, no matter what diet we're talking about, that has such a huge impact on the success of it, the adherence of it.
Hey, that's why we're doing this, right? Educating. But
Yeah.
I on the flip side, and I think you'll agree with when I say this, like, we know if someone's going to do keto, like, okay, that automatically eliminates refined and processed carbohydrate if you're doing it
Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So that is a benefit out of it that I know if someone's wanting to do keto, like that is going to be there, right? And I have a few other points, but I want to kind of get, maybe your or an first and then mine, let's talk about our personal opinion, on keto, what we think about it, from a personal standpoint, professional standpoint. And then, I can throw in, what I'll do sometimes if my clients want to go keto. And I don't know if you've ever, you can add this too. I don't know if you've ever experimented it with keto. I've experimented some, so we can kind of just, give that personal experience slash opinion, if you want to.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited to hear about your experience with it. And I have actually been thinking about experimenting with it purely to just get a, just for a fun experiment. I feel like sometimes, people in our field do that just to kind of see, what's out there, what people are trying. I have not. And the reason is, and I think people will be, maybe some people can relate. A lot of the foods that I take in, I would say I trend more towards a higher carbohydrate diet. And that doesn't mean I'm out here just, eating refined carbs and all of that. But yeah, a lot of the foods that I ingest and really like and are staples in my diet are carbohydrate-based foods or higher carb. And that's the point of eliminating fats or proteins. But the reason I found that interesting is because I made a conscious effort to actually increase my fat intake, and specifically healthy fats, more polyunsaturated, monounsaturated fats that we talked about a little in the last episode. And it was a little bit challenging for me because, to keep my relative intake roughly the same, without, tediously or meticulously tracking it. I had to, make some minor adjustments, and I found that to be challenging. So to follow a ketogenic diet, I think for me would be tough, but I am interested in seeing how it affects my energy levels, seeing how it affects my cognition and things like that. So that's kind of my personal vignette on the ketogenic diet. Professionally, I think that the evolution of it, my nursing opinion of it is that it absolutely has a place in medical nutrition therapy. And I want to highlight that because I think nutrition is something that is not often leveraged in the medical world. You don't see a whole lot of nutrition education in med school for doctors, and you don't see it that much for nurses even. The nutrition certification, the nutrition education is something I sought out outside of nursing school. And so,
One, sorry,
and again, that's not,
one class on average,
yeah,
3 hours, one class on
one
average.
class.
A nurse gets one class, a
And
doctor
medical school, I would say, is probably the same. And
one. I think
that's
it's one.
across all of their
Yeah, I think
schools.
it's one brief,
Yeah.
so
Which is
nurses at least,
insane.
yeah, nurses get a semester of it. 'Cause I remember I taught,
Yeah, we did.
a nutrition class at Marshall that was to nursing students. So specifically
But
one.
yeah, and it's, I mean, it's nutritional basics. So that I think is important to point out because, again, there is a the pharmaceutical entity that exists is a business. I'm not anti-pharmaceuticals, right? I want to make that clear. But I do think that there's a lot of research out there that has shown how successful pharmaceuticals can be in conjunction with lifestyle intervention and how doses can be reduced or certain medications can be eliminated. You can reduce the risk of adverse effects. Again, we are not giving medical advice on here. We are not suggesting you come off your medications, but I do want to highlight the importance and the real estate that nutritional intervention deserves in a medical setting. It is equally as important and can carry as much weight, if not more, as the drugs do. It's just we as a society have, we are used to pharmaceuticals being prescribed to treat different disorders. And so sometimes nutritional interventions take a back seat. And so I do want to highlight the importance of a true ketogenic diet in refractory cases of seizures and epilepsy that can't be treated through surgery or drugs. 100% has its place. I also agree with the evolution that the ketogenic diet has taken to be marketed to the general public because do I think that most people need to be on the OG keto diet? No, I don't recommend it. However, I do think these hybrid diets that are a bit more paleo, Mediterranean, ketogenic, in conjunction with the education of just eating more whole foods, less refined carbohydrates and sugars, I love that, and I think that it provides people with constraints that allow them to know what to consume. And I think the big question is sometimes like, okay, everyone's telling me balance and a little bit of this is fine, but mainly this, and I don't know what to do. And sometimes just for a little bit, following something that does have a little bit strict and keyword, following it for a little bit with stricter guidelines teaches you some of these boundaries and it guides you towards eating whole foods. It guides you towards being more mindful of when you're feeling full. It guides you towards incorporating fruits and vegetables, all of the things that all of these diets preach and across the board have a positive effect on us. And so professionally, I like the evolution. I like the concept of the modified ketogenic paleo Mediterranean diet. My only caution is with the marketing that's out there, you know, and you see, you know, these Reese's cups that are marketed as ketogenic. You see the coffee with like coconut oil and MCT oil as like being this magic bullet. It's not magic. And that's not even really what the ketogenic diet intended for, right? It didn't intend for you to go to the middle of the grocery store and take the processed ketogenic chocolate chips or whatever it might be. So just keeping in mind, again, the marketing ketogenic diet and then the evolution of what the ketogenic diet has kind of become. I feel like I rambled a little bit there, but I hope that point kind of came across.
No, I mean, here you're gonna hit my highlights, like, and this is what's awesome to see, right? Because when I do these episodes with what I'm calling Jeremy and friends, like, we've got a few notes, guys, but we don't really discuss a lot because I want my guests to give their opinions and what they feel and what they see, and then I can come and do the same thing. And I think it's so cool because you hit the nail on the head, and you just said a little bit different than what I say, right? So evolution as a coach, right? I have learned it's not my way or the highway. If someone is dead set on doing nutritional ketosis or they want to do keto, then I have to be able to navigate them through that journey to the best of my ability so they have success. Okay. And who I see it works really well for, you mentioned this, what I love what you said. Sometimes people need guidelines because they can't control what they're doing. There's a lot of us that are addicted to carbohydrates, and that's the brutal truth. There's some of you guys and gals that are listening to this that you can't control your carbohydrate consumption. So it's easier to say, you know what? I am not going to eat these foods for a little while, right? Until we learn how to maybe emotionally, behaviorally, to work those foods in, right? So, I think it works really well if you feel like you have a carbohydrate addiction and you don't know what to consume when it comes to the carbohydrate realm of things. Fat loss, yes. If we're in a caloric deficit, it's going to work well for fat loss. It's going to work well for reversing insulin resistance. Now, here's four bullet points I want to notice that I see problems out of a nutritional ketosis diet if not done correctly. One, you still got to track for me. If you don't track, you could be overeating fat calories, right? Even if you're like, Jeremy, I'm doing zero carbs. Great. But you're also consuming 300 grams of fat a day. So therefore, your calories are high. And if your calories are high, you're not going to burn the fat that's on your body. So you have to make sure that you are within that caloric goal based on what your goals are. Number two, and this is a modification I make to people, you're not consuming enough protein based on some of the guidelines out there. That's the reason I love the guidelines you gave on the Mediterranean, which is around that 30 to 45%, because if we're consuming 30 to 45% protein on a maintaining diet, which I would keep them there even when I reduce the calories, that's enough protein. That's going to be close to that 0.8 to 1.0 grams of protein per target body weight. And that's generally what I put them, because remember, you should still be lifting weights for overall health. You should still be doing some resistance training. You should be doing these things that we need a little bit more protein in our diet. So that's a little bit of a differentiation that I do inside the keto plan. Okay. The other thing is, if you cheat too often, right, you have to commit to the keto diet. If you're going to cheat and have more carbs, then you're going to be bouncing in and out of nutritional ketosis. And that is not a good place to be. You're not going to feel good. So if someone's going to cheat, I'm like, no, let's just go low carb. If we're not going to be able to stick to it and stay this super low carb for a while, this is where we need to be. And the other thing
And
that I would call.
one point on that is, and that's why it's so important to have like a coach, or someone that you can trust, or an information. But recognizing that, again, for a short period of time, cutting out all carbohydrates, but then understanding that it might not be all carbohydrates that make you not feel good. And so understanding that maybe by cutting out some of the foods that you thought, oh, it's just high carbs, maybe it was like the ice creams and the chips and the processed breads and things like that that are not just carbs, right? But they're refined carbohydrates, which means the nutrients are stripped. They're also, they tend to be laden with sugars and saturated fats and potentially even trans fat. And so again, cutting those out for a bit, if the rest of the carbs get cut out a bit for that, fine. But then understanding the education piece that there's a difference between those carbohydrate sources that I just named and carbohydrate sources like brown rice, beans and legumes and quinoas and farros and grains and fruits and vegetables, homemade sourdough, things like that, and so understanding that educational piece. And the reason I bring that up is because I think sometimes full eliminations, if people don't know how to properly reintroduce, it introduces food fears and can sometimes introduce unhealthy dietary restriction patterns. And so just understanding why you're doing certain things, and then getting that education to build in, I think is key.
100%. It goes with what we say, right? Like, I don't care what nutritional approach you're doing. If you cut out all fast food and processed food, you start sleeping, you quit drinking, you're going to feel better, right?
You're gonna feel
But
great.
you're going to feel great. But after a given period of time, like maybe you'll feel better if we did work some carbs in. So that was actually, Maddie, that was number four on my list is, make sure if you decide to do a keto-based diet, you have a game plan to come after out of it, right? Unless you just want to stay in it for life, when that's okay too. But for
If it
most
works for
people,
you,
correct.
absolutely. But yeah.
But most people may want to go to just a lower carb diet. We have to know how to work them in. Okay. So real quick, here's what I generally do. I am a big fan of 50 grams of carbs or less a day on a keto-based diet. That kind of goes with what you mentioned earlier inside the Mediterranean hybrid. My rule of thumb, though, is you can only do one serving of berries, and the rest of those carbs have to come from vegetables, right? So, because then I know that A, the individual is still getting fiber in their diet, they're still getting their vitamins and minerals and their polyphenols and their antioxidants because they're doing a serving of berries a day and they're doing a serving of or multiple servings of vegetables. this keeps the fiber up, as I mentioned, right? But you can still get into ketosis because the fiber is high in that 50 grams of carbs, right? So that's my rule of thumb. That's the only carb sources they can do. And then I mentioned how much I did the protein, and of course, the fat would make up the remaining part of the calories. So that's kind of my approach if someone wants to do keto, and it works really well. And I want to end my part today. I'm going to read an excerpt from a position paper from the ISSN, which
Wait,
is the
real quick,
journal.
Jeremy, I'm going to
Yes.
interject because
Okay.
I want, we did talk about this excerpt, and I think that's a good one for us to wrap up on. I just want to kind of underline something you said about how you, and again, every coach is going to have a bit of a different approach, especially with this evolutionary ketogenic diet, right? Because it's kind of, you know, there's a bit more leeway with it. But if you're listening to that and you're hearing Jeremy say, he recommends a serving of berries and the rest of the carbs come from vegetables. That probably eliminates a lot of you that thought you might want to do a ketogenic diet. And so just understand what we said, that it's not ketogenic diet or the highway if you're trying to lose weight. There's a lot of different ways to lose weight or create a healthier lifestyle or improve your biometrics, your blood pressure, you know, blood lipids, things like that. And so listening to this, if you're like, oh man, like I thought I wanted to do keto, that sounds really impossible, don't think that that's the only way. But if that speaks to you and you're like, yeah, that's pretty much already what I'm doing, then maybe that is a great avenue. So I just kind of wanted to understate that because I think listening to how you coach keto and the kind of dedication that you need to have to it is it would not be an easy transition for a lot of people nutritionally.
Which is perfect for this last point, right? Because, you know, here's this position paper. Remember, position paper, guys, is when you know, a society, you know, in this case, International Society of Sports Nutrition looks at all the research out there and they come with their stand. And I'll read this verbatim. A wide range of dietary approaches, low carb to low fat to low carbohydrate to ketogenic and all points in between, can be similar effective for improving body composition, which allows for a flexible or flexibility within a program design. To date, no controlled inpatient isocaloric diet, meaning the calories are the same in those diets, comparison when protein is matched between all groups, which I think is very important for people to know, right? So we're saying calories and protein, which is what my education is backed on. Meaning that none of these groups have clinically meaningful fat loss or thermic advantage to a lower carb versus keto to high carb, right? So, you know, what that is saying, guys, is it still is going to come down to, you know, if you want to drop some body fat and maintain your muscle tissue, make sure you're optimizing your protein intake and then optimizing your calories. And then what's happening inside of the, you know, ratio of carbs to fat or percentage of carbs to fat is really up to you as an individual. But hopefully, you know, us covering history, evolution of keto makes you understand it better versus maybe just getting blindsided, for lack of better terms, of the marketing that's out there on some of these, you know, keto products or, you know, being sold something that, you know, oh, hey, keto friendly, when you were mentioned, it's got a bunch of like the peanut butter eggs, you know, which have a bunch of the sugar alcohols in it, net carbs and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I think if I had to highlight something, it would be the best way to find success, whether it be for optimizing health or whether it be for weight loss, whatever your specific goals are, is adherence and education. And so the next time you're considering trying something, whether it be a new training plan, whether it be a new recovery modality, whether it be a new dietary approach, nutritional intervention, don't be afraid to do some research. Seek out some sources that you trust. See what the research shows on that modality, because it's never magic, right? But it can seem it, they can they sell it well, and so it can sometimes
100%.
seem like there's a new magic thing. But do your research. So one, become educated, and then find something that you know you're going to adhere to. Consistency will win out every time.
Awesome. Maddie, I cannot thank you enough for agreeing to come on here, multiple times throughout this year and help me truly create, you and Dr. Vic are helping me create, what I'm deeming, Jeremy and Friends, which allows me to be more of a interviewee or no interviewer, right? Where I get to ask,
Interviewer.
yeah, I get to ask the questions and bring in a different perspective, right? Because even as simple as like some of the different terminology that you may use to approach something or hit a highlight, I know recognizes with that. And you and I both have learned that in the strength and conditioning world, right? You could
Oh,
come in
yeah.
and I could be telling this person hip backs, hip backs, hip back. They have no idea what I'm saying, right? They don't know to send their hips back. You come in and say, hey, hinge your hips. And then they like send their hips back. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like we've understand this from the strength and conditioning side of things that different cues work for different people. And I am humble enough to understand that that also works in the educational world when we're diving into some of these topics. So, I can't thank you enough for coming on and doing this series with me.
I so appreciate it, Jeremy. I always take away some new insight from you. And I just thoroughly enjoyed discussing this stuff. And I'm excited to hear that your listeners have been asking for different topics. So pretty excited to come back on here.
Awesome, guys. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Jeremy Mullins podcast, specifically the Jeremy and Friends. And until next time, I hope you guys have a wonderful day.
See you guys. Thanks, Jeremy.